Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to contact us or send us a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about accountability. Accountability. And we actually used a quote that I'm going to read out loud because it's such a good one about, well, taking responsibility, being accountable. And we don't usually quote anybody, but this one I couldn't resist. So here we go. It's also, if you would like to see it, it's also on the written promotional little explanation that goes with each show. So it's also on the writing at the top of each show. There we go. So here we go. George Bernard Shaw said, "People are always blaming circumstances for what they are. But the people who get on in this world are those who get up and look for the circumstances they want, and if they can't find them, they make them." Wow, we're those kind of people, aren't we? People are always blaming circumstances for what they are. But the people who get on in this world are those who get up and look for the circumstances they want, and if they can't find them, they make them. And to a great extent, that's what we do, isn't it? Yes, we make dances so that we can reach a successful conclusion and have a successful outcome, whatever change it is that we're working towards, whatever the issues are, so that we can actually accomplish them. Yes, and oftentimes it's the circumstances that need changing, that we need to work towards, that we need to effectuate an improvement. Yes, effectuate change. So, as we often do, we call this show accountability. And as we often do, because we are practical people, we're going to define what accountability means within our context, really within the context of what George Bernard Shaw said about circumstances. Yes. So what is accountability within our context, the context of a mediation, a negotiation, an alternative dispute resolution, oftentimes a workshop or a seminar, right? We're learning something, we're teaching something. What is accountability within our context? Oh, look, we have lots of people. Thank you all for being here. How lovely. So accountability, Grace says that accountability, and a lot of people agree with it, is accepting responsibility for failures as well as successes. Accepting responsibility for failures as well as successes. Yes, we all want to accept responsibility for the success, but to be truly accountable, we have to accept responsibility for all of our actions. And sometimes they don't work out all that well. And one of the ways to accept responsibility and accountability, right, and a lot of people are mentioning this, Grace and others, is to be willing to try to fix it. You know, this may be an Americanism, and this is, of course, a global show. But you ever hear the expression, the law of unintended consequences? Yeah. You did something, or the group did something, we changed position in some way, and it seemed like a really good idea at the time. Yeah, it seemed like the next step. It seemed like a good idea. The process was going forward, right? But when it was put out into the world in reality, there was a reaction to it that we didn't foresee. It caused a chain of events that we didn't think about. Yeah. And maybe they're going to ultimately be a success, but they're kind of a surprise. And at the moment, they might even, yeah, we never exactly say that we fail, but they might not be in our favor, right? Yeah. And we need to be accountable for that. And to get together again and say, you know, that didn't work out like we planned. Let's see what to do about it now. Let's see what needs to be done. Let's find out it is our responsibility to work on this, to try to turn it around so that it has the response that we expected, right? Yeah, to fix things. That's being accountable. Not to make kind of an oops, yeah, a mess we're calling it, some people, yeah, and then walk away. No, you have to take responsibility and work towards a good conclusion. Yeah, work towards success. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so accepting responsibility for failures as well as successes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, a lot of people using this expression. Devon and others are saying you need to own, O-W-N, your mistakes. Responsibility, be accountable for them. Owning mistakes and working towards solution, is what Devon says. Owning mistakes and working towards solution is being accountable within our context and, quite frankly, within all kinds of contexts, right? Yeah. If you've made a mistake, own up to it, as that may be an Americanism, but it means just admit it, and work towards a solution. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. What is accountability in our context? This is a real good point. Alago and others are saying that responsibility and accountability is also acknowledging and thanking assistance. Yeah, that's a very good point that a lot of people don't think of as a part of accountability. And then there's those of us who do it naturally. But accountability really means giving everyone credit and not taking all the credit for success, right? Yeah, acknowledging and thanking assistance because it was a team effort. Yes, yes, and we've all seen that. We all see when somebody has had a lot of teamwork and a lot of help and a lot of effort from other people and a lot of thinking and a lot of consensus. And when it turns out well, their success, somebody tries to grab all the credit, right? And yes, and usually the point is being made, thank you for all of your participation, Lago and others. Usually the person grabbing the spotlight that's taking credit for all the success and is going, I'm responsible, I'm accountable for that because it worked. They're usually the person that put in the least amount of actual work, right? But they are the oftentimes in a like a supervisory leadership type role, right? Yeah, mine. Well, true accountability would thank other people by name, thank you, for their assistance and say it was a team effort, right? Yes. And if you ever have the urge to grab accountability, grab a success, just I know you wouldn't because we're all not that kind of person. But it will eventually backfire because people will know and will resent it. So, and they won't work with you again. So it's a short-term thing. But I've seen it done, and it's kind of like, yeah, how about us? How about the people that did all the work? Yeah, and really made this happen. Mm-hmm. Acknowledging and thanking assistance and team effort. Mm-hmm. So we've now discovered what accountability is within our context in general, and we actually have quite a bit of consensus, quite a bit of agreement amongst all of you guys that are there out there. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. We have defined accountability within our context. So let's go on and ask, what do we have accountability for as leaders? What's our job? What's our accountability? What's our responsibility as leaders? Yeah, because we're the one up front. We're the one that is in charge. What's our responsibility as leaders? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Vaughn and others are making a real good point that our main responsibility is in leading the process. Mm-hmm. Keeping everybody focused and leading the process forward, because that's our job. That's what we're there for. We are the focal point, right? Excuse me, took a sip of water. We are the focal point, and we are in charge. Yeah. So we're responsible, we're accountable for leading the process. Mm-hmm. Now, how do we do this? Mm-hmm. Well, okay, I'm going to call this setting a good example, because we've got so many good ideas here. And mainly, it is true that the leader accountability has to do with really being a good example, showing by word action how we should proceed. And the first of all is leading the process. Many of you know, because you've been here before, by the way, prior shows archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. And a lot of you have used the workbook and been to live seminars and workshops. Yes. Yes, you can just buy that on the website, also the workbook. And it is always the leader is the head of the process and leads by good example. When we talk about the process, right, the process itself, I actually talk about it at the beginning. I do. I make a little, well, speech is kind of a big word. People call it speech. But I tell people how, in basic terms, the process is going to work. Unless I've seen everybody in the room before and they all really know. But even so, it's a good reminder. We get through to the housekeeping things, right? And then we introduce each other and like that, because it is important for people to feel comfortable in the process. And a lot of people have never done it before, mediation, negotiation, for example. And those of them that have done it with someone else, maybe. Or maybe they've done it with us a while back. Mm-hmm. Go around the room, introduce yourself, and say what interesting thing happened to you between the time we saw you last. Yeah, that's a good one. And because people do forget which one's which, I confess this. I won't tell it to anybody but you and the thousands of people that are listening, of course, that I sometimes can't exactly remember, right? I see a lot of people. I don't see you necessarily in person that much. Mm-hmm. And if we all go around and reintroduce ourselves, it prevents an embarrassing moment. Fabulous. So responsible for leading the process. Now, we've decided that the leader is responsible for being a good example, right? Yeah. Good example. For setting a good example, as Anna says. If we don't set the good example, if we do not follow the process and the rules, then how can we expect others to do so? Yes. Mm-hmm. Good example. Margaret says that we need to be a good example of the civility rules. Oh, yes, yes, yes. The civility rules, I think, pop up on every show because they're the only rule that Recipe for Peace Now really has. Other than that, we watch and we listen and we think about the people and the issues, but the civility rules underline everything. Yes, I know. Thank you all for, we have really a lot of people listening, and thank you all for being here, and thank you for the attorneys, and welcome to the new people. Return, yes. The civility rules are very simple at their core. They say we will not be rude to each other. Sounds simple, doesn't it? Sometimes more difficult to implement than it seems. But we will not be rude to each other. We will not butt in when somebody else is speaking. We won't try to take their turn. We won't bully anyone. We won't be rude. The civility rules can be written down depending on the circumstances. Oftentimes you don't need to. Yeah, I'm not big on actually setting out rules unless you need them. Mm-hmm. Depends on your group. Yes, I'm going to say it depends again. You guys say, I say that all the time. But it's true. It depends on your group. Some groups are smallish and very much in accord with each other. Excuse me. They're trying to effectuate an outside change. But they're all in one step. They're all pretty much reach consensus easily. Some groups are very diverse. The people, the participants, are not only very diverse in opinion, in background, but oftentimes they are, for lack of a better word, agents of a different group. They are representatives, maybe not officially, but they're representing a point of view that is held by many people in their religion, in their background, from where they came from, right? Yeah. And that may be very, very, very diverse than the other people in the room. They're all very different. But they've come together for a single outcome that they all perceive will be beneficial, oftentimes in different ways. Mm-hmm. Yes, different ways. So they actually need the civility rules maybe written out, maybe stated at each meeting, right? Yeah? Yeah, sometimes that's true. And those of you who have been here before know that I'm big on enforcing time limits for speaking so that everyone gets a turn, right? And an equal turn. I know you guys, we've discussed this in prior shows archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. And we have discussed this. A lot of people use different kinds of methods. Some of you have someone in the room, like hold up a card or something, a 2-minute warning, or a 30-second warning, whatever it is, yes. And some of you ding something. I personally, and this is just my personal preference, I think that if you have to actually set time limits, it's because you've got over the conversation and not letting anyone else speak, right? I like something that counts off the time visually so that and without bias, so that everyone can see that everyone got the same amount of time. And they can look at it and see the 2-minute warning. Now, this can be, I know a lot of you use cell phones. We count down the timing on it. Yeah, nothing wrong with that. All set our cell phones, ding, so to speak. I personally, because I don't know, I've gotten used to it, and I think that participants can really understand and see it very well. I personally like an actual kitchen timer that ticks off and goes ding. Yes, some of you argue that that's very distracting. Might be. Yeah, I'm going to say it depends again. Whatever you like, but I like something that is not human counted. I like something that everyone can see, everyone got the same amount of time. Because you believe me, people think they got less than their neighbor. Just take my word for it, yes. So the civility rules. We will take turns, we will not be rude. And the leader must be a good example. You must never lose your temper, never roll your eyes, never be rude, never butt in, right? As long as they're within their time. Yeah, you must listen with empathy, understanding, not agreement necessarily. People think that empathy and agreement are the same thing. Not true. Empathy means that I listen with understanding. I'm trying to see what your side is. I'm making a sincere effort. It doesn't mean I agree with it. It just means that I now understand where your opinions are coming from, what their basis is. Yeah, very different than I agree. I understand. It's different. Yeah. So, civility. Oh, people are asking about an example of a group where the participants are very, very diverse in interest but want the same outcome. I'll give just a quick one. In the United States, and this is one that I've recently seen, is what, well, not that recently, I recently. In the United States, marijuana is illegal, right? You cannot use marijuana, you cannot buy it and like that. Federal law. Federal law is above state law. And it's been illegal for a really long time. Groups got together for years, actually, and worked getting marijuana to be legalized in the United States. It's legal in other countries, I know. And yeah, don't even argue about how silly it is to be illegal and like that, and the drain on social services and taxpayer money for jailing people for selling and using marijuana. Right, right, yeah. I think that about a lot of things, but just take my word for it. It's a drain. And so a lot of people got together, and they were, but the groups, they had to work together, right? Because this is a challenge. To change federal law is a serious challenge. Just take my word for this. Law, politicians move slowly. You know, the United States is a very big country, and there's a lot of diversity within the states. Some are considered more conservative than others. There is no diversity in the fact that politicians all want to keep their jobs, and they are beholden to the voters in their state. What I'm telling you is it doesn't make any difference what they personally feel. If their state is very conservative and they feel that it would be a bad thing for them to come out in favor of legalization of marijuana, they won't do it. So this is a tough ticket is what I'm telling you. It's hard. Hard to get anything changed with the federal government, and this is a particularly hot topic. Groups worked for years. Who were the groups? Well, they had to get together with each other. And you had tremendous diversity in the room, right? You had people who wanted to grow it, people who wanted to sell it, people in the legal system who felt that it should not be something that takes resources. You had people who wanted to use it. Mainly the people who wanted to use it that were fighting were people with an illness that marijuana would alleviate, right? Make them feel better. Age-related glaucoma, HIV, AIDS people were very vocal and like that. Each of these groups, you want the store owners too, right. Each of these groups were very vocal. Each of them were very determined. Each of them were very different in interest, but they had the same goal, the same success being legalization. So they all had to work together, which means that the civility rules really needed to be enforced, and everybody had to go lockstep behind a leader who was the representative of all sides and decide how to argue it. Yes, it was. This is true. People are saying, and this is true in the United States, this is true. People are saying that this also was highly unsuccessful at a federal level. This is absolutely true. Tried for years, didn't get anywhere. Had to do something outrageous process-wise. Remember, responsible for leading the process? The leaders had to decide with the consensus of the participants to go an entirely different direction, because it just wasn't going to work after all that effort. And everybody hates that. I hate it. After all that effort, I mean, it seems like we must be getting closer, right? No. Just weren't. Yeah. And it's hard to change course. And what they did was they had to do something that had never, ever been done before. They had to go and make the law change on the state levels. Very few states, by the way, who are now, some states have legalized marijuana. Yeah? Even though it's still against federal law. What a concept. Anyway, but it was an example of a group of people, very diverse in their interests, but all wanting the exact same outcome, legalization, but for different reasons. Yeah. What else do we have accountability for as leaders? Mm-hmm. Rashad and others are saying efficiency. Yeah, efficiency with use of time, efficiency with organization. Efficiency with, I've seen groups fail because the leader didn't keep up communication, didn't get everybody to come. That's, yeah, and that's one of the main things that you need to be able to be efficient with your time and with other people's time, right? Time is your most precious commodity. Everybody's short on time. So that's one of the things that you have to respect and be efficient about in your organization, yeah. Mm-hmm. Frankie and others are saying that the leader is accountable for keeping his or her word, keeping their word. That means that if you say you'll do something, you'll do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even if it turns out to be a bigger job than you thought it was going to be, or harder, or maybe even less advantageous to you. I give you my word, I will do it. The best of my ability. I will. I'll do it. And that's very important, because if it gets around, and it will, that your word is no good, that you say something, but it's really not going to do it, not true. If it becomes inconvenient or whatever, you're just going to blow it off. If that becomes true, then no one will trust your word. Very important to be a person of good character. A person whose word means something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Accountability for his leaders, setting a good example. Yeah, I'm going to go for this. George and others are talking about punctual attendance. Mm-hmm. If you say that the meeting is starting at 6 o'clock, you got to get there 5 minutes early. You're the leader. First of all, you need to make sure it's set up and the door is open and like that. But you can't come strolling in 15 minutes late. You've got to get the group together. You've got to make the introductions all around. Very important to be punctual. And if you say there's going to be a meeting, to really come, unless you have some sort of a terrible emergency, and then you need to send someone else in your stead who will be punctual and organized, and be able to take the leadership position, right? Yeah. Yeah, you can't just send, I don't know, the babysitter. You need to connect with somebody in the group, tell them you've had a terrible emergency, you're not making it, or you're going to come late, so that everybody knows that this is a one-time thing, and that if they ever had that, they're supposed to call in too, right? They're supposed to let everybody know, right? Yeah, punctual and attendance, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sonora and others are saying that the leader sets a good example and is accountable for that, of reaching out to others. Yeah, reaching out, saying, you know what, we are working towards whatever the issue is, whatever the outcome is, but other groups that are doing it too. Let's reach out to them and see if we can work together and not keep reinventing the wheel, so to speak, not keep wasting time doing something that's already been handled, already been done, right? Yeah. Good point. Sometimes reaching out to others is not to like groups. Sometimes it's to groups that are on opposite sides of you, right? They think the opposite of whatever the issue is that you want resolved. You want it to be changed, and they say, no, it's good the way it is. Mm-hmm. If you reach out to them as the leader, perhaps we can reach some accommodation, right? Perhaps we've had a misunderstanding, a miscommunication, and we are closer together to effectuate positive change than we think we are. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to reach out. It's the leader. It's you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can approach whoever the other leader is and explain, talk to them, see how far apart we really are, and, of course, make very clear that if we do work together, that the other leader will not lose their position, right? People like to be leader. Yes, they worry. They will not lose their position because you're trying to take over. Very important. I come right out and say stuff like that. I honestly do. And since my word is golden, and pretty much everybody knows it, which is why it's so important, if you promise to do something, to really do it, I reach out, and I actually say this because I think sometimes people misinterpret the connecting, right? They worry that you're just trying to look for weakness. Mm-hmm. And it is true that I have a very strong personality, and I do not want to be the only leader. I don't want your job. I have my own. But sometimes people worry about that. Mm-hmm. So reaching out to others is one of the responsibilities, the accountabilities of leadership. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Thank you. Brian and Arek and others are saying that it is very important that we as leaders have the responsibility, we are accountable to the whole group to be impartial and unbiased. Yes. We're the third party neutral. We're the leader. Impartial and unbiased. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, yeah, that's true. Sometimes we are not the third-party neutral. Sometimes we have a group that has a strong mission, and we are the leader of it. We are promoting it. But within the group, when we are discussing what needs to be done, when we are having empathy for others, right, for listening, the leader needs to remember to be unbiased and impartial. Mm-hmm. Even if they're not technically the paid third-party neutral, which is more usual in a mediation or a seminar workshop type situation, and less so in an organizational negotiation, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So unbiased and impartial. Arek says you need to be aware and cautious of preconceived notions. Aware and cautious of preconceived notions. I came in with this idea, right? I know that it's right, what should be done, because of my preconceived notion, and I've done that, and I've gotten this notion because of personal experience, because of teachings, mm-hmm, because someone I respect and admire, maybe even a family member, has told me it is so. All of us have them. True. All of us have them from childhood. All of us have them from the experiences that we've had over the years. And you need to always keep in your mind, and I actually make a real conscious effort to do this. Excuse me. I feel like my voice is going out of spec. Excuse me. I make a real conscious effort to think about whether I've got a preconceived notion about this, and how it's impacting how I'm dealing with these people at this time on these issues. Because really there is nothing else. It's these people in this time on these issues is what counts. Right? Right. Yeah. So, preconceived notions. Mm-hmm. Linda and others are saying that the main thing that the leader is responsible and accountable for is listening. Yes. Listening, and Reagan and others added listening with empathy. It's the main thing that we're responsible for, to get to us to listen. Remember, we're the good example, right? The main thing we are is a good example, to get us to listen with empathy and to get everybody else in the room to listen with empathy. Very important, the art of listening. Yes, which is why oftentimes we do indeed have time limits, and we try to move forward at all times because it's complicated, right? We're dealing with people, with emotions, with ideas, with opinions, and we need to reach consensus so we can move forward and not just get bogged down, not get stymied. Mm-hmm. So we've decided what the leader is accountable for. Oops, if I don't move this process along as leader of this show, we're not going to get through to the recipes. I know sometimes we don't. Does that make me a bad leader? I'm sorry. Oh, because we often have such wonderful conversations that we run short on time. Yes. So we've decided what the leaders. By the way, all shows are archived, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. So if you want to hear a prior show on a different specific topic, go look. There's lots of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what do our participants have accountability for? We've decided what we're accountable for as the leader. What do our participants have to do? What are they accountable for? Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. Fargo and others are saying, we have a lot of agreement on this one, that our participants are accountable and responsible for participating in good faith. Participating in good faith. I really want to help. I have given an assignment. I am going forward. Yes, I am part of the team. Good faith. Now, you oftentimes don't have a problem with this if the people are volunteers, right? Oh, all right. Sometimes people are saying sometimes you do because somebody's kind of from the opposite camp and they've come to see if they can derail you. Ooh, some of you have had spies, like. Yeah, all right, I can accept that. But basically speaking, if people are volunteers, then they're enthusiastic and interested. You have participation in good faith issues sometimes. If you have a forced team, made, for example, as a workplace idea. I don't know what else to call it besides the idea or concept. Because when you throw people together and force them to create a team, you've got to get them to participate in good faith, and you've always got some sullen ones who need to be told why it is that it's important that they gain some enthusiasm, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, ultimately, oftentimes it does come down to the fact that it's part of your job and you'd like to remain employed. Yeah, but you say it nice first time. Then you say a little more forcefully the second time. Yeah, so participating in good faith. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ray says the best effort, the participants have a responsibility to give their best effort to continue the process to a successful conclusion. Best effort to continue the process to a successful conclusion. I'm going to give it my all. I'm going to give it my best. We understand this may indeed be the type of a group that needs a mission statement, right? We're going to talk about that a little further down. Mm-hmm. What else are the participants accountable for? What are they responsible to do? Lisa and others are saying that they need to adhere to the civility rules, right? We talked about the civility rules just now and what they are and what we're going to do to how we're going to say them and announce them and enforce them. But there's participant responsibility to adhere to them. Yeah, to adhere to the civility rules. Mm-hmm. You know, this is an interesting point that Hackman and others are making, that it is participant accountability and responsibility to accept and respect the leader. To accept and respect the leader. It might, especially if you're not being paid, you're a third party, it's not a mediation or a negotiation, it might be a leader responsibility to step down if someone can do it better. Right? Yeah. Or at least have co-leadership. Right? Sometimes in a group, there's somebody with really, really important expertise, and they need to help. They need to be elevated to a position of authority. I see that sometimes. I don't tend to be real jealous of that. Excuse me, because I'm more interested in the outcome than I am in the who was sitting at the head of the table idea. But sometimes people get kind of anxious and they really need to be the sole leader. Be calm. Yeah. There's nothing, it's good negotiation skills, it's good consensus building to let someone else in as leader, right? Yeah. And they might even be team leader of a different angle, of a different, something that needs to be researched, for example, or needs to have some phone calls made or some connection, right? Yeah, and they have the ability to do it. So they need to accept and respect the leader. I think the leader needs to accept and respect the participants too. You know, this is an interesting point too. Jillian says that the main accountability for participants, the responsibility, is a willingness to move on and reach consensus on the next steps. Yeah. Willingness to move on and reach consensus on the next steps. I'm going to add, even if it's not exactly the solution you thought it was going to be. We have to reach consensus. We need to move on, right? And not keep going backwards. It's been decided. We're moving on. We reach consensus on the next step. Richard and others and Vida are saying that participants also need to listen with empathy and understanding. And Vida says the preconceived notions need to be flexible. And you know what? That's a really good point. You cannot eliminate preconceived notions. You can't eliminate your own. You've still got them. Yeah. We're not trying to change people's fundamental thought process, right? What we're trying to do is we're trying to reach consensus, right? For this issue, at this time, to reach this outcome, consensus is the key to it. And it is very important to understand the preconceived notions don't go away, but they need to be understood that that's what they are, and they need to be flexible, right? Flexibility is the key to this, to be flexible. So we've talked about the leader. We've talked about the participants. Let's talk about the group. What is the group accountability? Because after all, the group is kind of an entity in the room too, right? The group itself is, well, almost a person. Yeah. So what is the group accountability? Michael said, others are saying it's to work together as a team. Yeah, to think of themselves as a team, to work together as a team. There might even be teams if the group is fairly large and there are different issues that need to be addressed. We might make teams. We might make smaller groups. Some people call them committees. It depends how you feel about that word. I kind of like the word team better because it has a connotation of working together. But this is really making committees, whatever it is you like to call it, but it's dividing the group up into interested parties and smaller groups who will then report back to the whole. And their accountability, the group accountability, is to act like that, to work together as a team. Yeah. Zori says that the group accountability and responsibility is the democratic consensus and move on, even if you had to compromise. Yeah, have a democratic consensus. We all vote and move on, even if we've had to compromise. And quite frankly, just about everybody will have compromised. Pardon me. My voice seems to be going slightly today. My goodness. Yeah, we've had a change in the weather here, and that usually affects that. Reach consensus and move on, even if you had to compromise. Yeah. You know, this is a good point. I'm going to call this clearly defining things as a group, right? We need to clearly define the goals. What it is that we want. That's what happens. Sometimes groups fail because they're not real clear on what it is that they want, what it is that needs to happen. What do you want? What needs to be done? They're unclear on the concept, right? Yeah. I don't know what it is that I really want. Therefore, I won't know it when I have it. That's the thing, see? Yeah. Know it when I have it. Don't understand what it is that I'm doing. You have to clearly define what success looks like, what you want, what's the goal. Work together as a team. Clearly define success. Yeah, what the goal is, correct. Riley and others are saying that you need to clearly define the next step. That's really a leader thing, but also it is a consensus building activity. Where should we go from here? That's the question. Where should we go? What's our next step? A lot of people are talking about a mission statement, Lee and others, yeah? I think a mission statement is great if it's needed. Some groups don't need a mission statement because they already know what their mission is. It's clearly defined. Legalize marijuana, medical first. Legal, it's clearly defined. That's the goal, that's the mission. It's how you get there that's the complicated part. I'm not fond of creating a mission statement just for the creation of a mission statement, as in it's one of the things on my checklist to begin with, because it is time-consuming, right? And you don't want to get bogged down in the wording of it. A very broad mission statement is not a mission statement at all. A very narrow one will get you in trouble eventually because it won't go exactly how you planned. And everything needs to be flexible. Everybody has to understand that they review the mission statement. Regular basis. Yeah. A lot of people talking about accommodating differences and working towards a common goal is a group responsibility, a group accountability. To accommodate differences and work towards a common goal. We've got quite a few people, Cammie and others, talking about cultural differences that need to be understood and accommodated, right? Religious ones also, people talking about religious. Yeah, Yasmin and others are making a good point that when you're talking about differences and the group, that you need to realize and understand that some of the individuals in the group are reporting back to organizations, reporting back to other leaders, reporting back to go home and go to the religious organizations and stuff and talk about it, right? Yeah. And they're bringing back those opinions to the group. Not so much their own. They may have influenced forming their own opinion, but it's not even their own opinion so much. It is the opinions of the people in the group, right? Yeah. And that is the group influence from the outside, and you have to understand and accommodate it. Yes, quite a few people are talking about social media. It used to be that when I first started in Dinosaurs Roamed the Earth, it used to be that if you wanted to talk about what was going on, you had to get somewhere and either use a phone or a piece of paper or your mouth face to face or something like that. Now, people report on their lives constantly and hit send lots. And I were talking about this for a second because Hussein and others are talking about the team, the group, needs to be responsible for respecting the privacy and confidentiality of other group members. Yeah. The privacy and confidentiality. Not everybody wants to be known, especially in their own cultural, religious, social type circle, family. Not everybody wants to be known that they're helping, that they have this opinion, that they really think the change should be effectuated, right? They think something that's going on is wrong. Not everybody wants everybody to know that they're part of that effort, right? Very important. I say this at the beginning. I ask people to not touch their mobile devices while we're meeting and to think very carefully about what they say on their mobile devices after we meet. You can't stop them. What are you going to do, keep their phone forever? No, you can stop them from texting and tweeting and things in the room. First of all, it's very distracting to have a bunch of tops of heads and fingers flying. Mm-hmm. And you can't think and listen with empathy while you're doing that. So I do have the no social media rule, right? And then people go for the timeout and they get desperate and they have to look at their... Yeah. Well, you know, some people are more addicted to it than others. And I enforce confidentiality. I do. It's very important. I have had people that really want to help and effectuate change, but they cannot come out publicly. And these are the people that are wonderful resources for the leader, and they kind of whisper in the leader's ear what they think should be done or who needs to be talked to, for example. But they don't want you to use their name. I take that very, very seriously. That's why your word needs to be good. And if somebody doesn't want me to use their name, I will not. Mm-hmm. Very important. Very important to maintain your integrity. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, also, you know, this is a good point. Justin is saying that they shouldn't editorialize about the process. And it is true that Benjamin Franklin, who was an American leader during the Declaration of Independence days, he's a historical figure, but he was very, very smart and he had a lot of sayings and things, and they're fabulous even today. Benjamin Franklin said that no one should see sausage or the law being made because it's messy. And it's got a lot of odds and ends and dribs and drabs and like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but when you get all done and you've reached consensus and you've come together and you've made a sincere effort and you've got a successful outcome, that's what they should see. They should see the magic, but not how it was made. Because a lot of times the how it was made shouldn't be reported on because it's not going to be the final outcome. We're talking about it. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, what are the ways, the recipe for peace now? See, I did leave, I've got like 5 minutes for the recipe. This is how I go over time. Oh, well. One of the ways, of course, the recipe for peace now advocates making a more convivial atmosphere so that we can reach consensus better, so that we can have some understanding, so we can see each other as people and not as representatives of an organization, right? Mm-hmm. One of the ways we do this is by having some food in the room. Mm-hmm. Because when we need a timeout, because things might be getting a little uncivil, we could always have a little break for food, right? We might be hungry, or we might have definite breaks for food and for comfort stops, if you know what I mean. Yes. And it is convivial, and it gives you something to talk about that won't make anybody mad. What is that? How did you make it? That smells wonderful. Mm-hmm. If you're going to have food, and yes, I'm going to say the same thing that I say each time we talk about food, you need to take a survey, and you need to ask if anybody has a food prohibition, an allergy, a religious prohibition, something they just won't eat, and then you pass that information all around. And also, you need to have everyone, when they come with food, come with what's in it. Not what it's called, but what's in it, a list, so that I can run my eye down the list and see if it's something that I would like to eat, that I can eat. Mm-hmm. I also think that there should be at least one safe recipe in the room. That's something that everybody can eat without any problems. And it's still going to have the list, right? It is full of ingredients that your people, because my people are different than yours, this is a global show, my people, a curry would be very, very adventurous, but probably not where you are, maybe, for example. You need to, the safe recipe would have ingredients that my people would have eaten before and be familiar with. They'd know if they can. Mm-hmm, yeah. So this is a safe recipe. You know what? A lot of you have seen me do something, for example, a mediation, negotiation, whatever, and I do indeed own a slow cooker. It's kind of a real convenience. You throw everything in, and the darn thing just cooks itself. You throw it in the morning. By 8 hours later, voila, there you have food. Fabulous. So it's kind of, I'm a big advocate of slow cookers. I don't oftentimes do a recipe that is meant for one because not everybody owns one. If you have one, if not, this can indeed be baked. You're going to actually bake it. Put some breadcrumbs over the top because it looks gorgeous and it tastes really good. And some Parmesan cheese. I like, there's actually such a thing in this area as Parmesan breadcrumbs that comes all mixed together. Yummy. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is going to be a chicken tetrazzini. Very nice, very creamy. I advocate using the pasta that is not long strands, even though it's more traditional, because it's harder to dish out. I like things that just go in a spoon. Mm-hmm. So let's have 4 pounds of boneless, skinless chicken breasts that we're going to cut into nice big chunks, like 1-inch pieces. Mm-hmm. It comes like that here. If it doesn't with you, you can use any kind of chicken pieces. Just take apart a whole chicken, but get rid of the bones and the skin and cut it into chunks. Mm-hmm. Now, this traditionally has some mushrooms. Sometimes people don't eat mushrooms. You could use a jar of mushrooms and drain it. I personally would put that in at the very end because they're soft by nature. I usually leave the mushrooms out because I don't like mushrooms, I think it is. I'm going to cheat and use a 16-ounce jar of Alfredo pasta sauce. If not, use a very simple recipe. But, you know, if you use the stuff in the jar, not only is it easier, but it stays together really well. I don't know why. It's probably some sort of horrible emulsifier. But just take my word for it. So a 16-ounce jar of Alfredo pasta sauce, that's the white stuff. Let's have 1/4 cup of chicken broth. You don't really have chicken broth you can put water in, but chicken broth gives a little extra flavor. I do like nutmeg in this. I'm going to put 3/4 teaspoon of nutmeg, ground nutmeg. I think it's delicious. I just like the taste of nutmeg. And you might have noticed that it doesn't have garlic in it because I usually put garlic in everything. So the nutmeg, I think, makes it just yummy. And let's have a nice cup of grated Parmesan cheese. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going to have ourselves not too big a slow cooker. If you want to double this recipe, make it bigger, of course, like a 4-quart one. We're going to combine the chicken. And let's put the mushrooms in. Let's drain them and put them in. They look nice. I don't know if they have taste. And then we're going to stir together in a separate little bowl the Alfredo sauce, the chicken broth, and the nutmeg, just so that it's all put together. Then we're going to throw it right over the chicken in the slow cooker. Mm-hmm. Very easy to do. Here we go. We're going to put the lid on it. We're going to turn it up to high. 3 hours. Done. Ha! It's the beauty of a slow cook. If you'd like, you could even put some of those little baby carroty type things, some sort of a hard vegetable on the bottom underneath the chicken. I usually favor carrots. So, remember the pasta, chicken tetrazzini, right? We're going to cook it al dente. We're going to drain it. We're going to set it aside. We're going to reheat it when we really use it. Our chicken is now done in the slow cooker because we didn't have to do anything to it. Fabulous. Yay! We're going to take our Parmesan cheese. We're going to stir it into the chicken. Mm-hmm. Right in the slow cooker. You don't even need another pot. Just stir it in kind of gradually so it all gets melty and delicious. You remember the pasta? Warm it up a little because you might have gotten cold. We're going to take the chicken, Parmesan, Alfredo sauce, nutmeg, yummy, yummy, yummy mixture. We are going to put it over the pasta, and we are going to be done. Fabulous. And yes, yes, it is true that this is a very good way to cheat on this. A lot of people are saying if you used a big enough slow cooker, because you have some room, right, because I have kind of a small one, but if you have a big enough one, you can actually take that delicious, cheesy, Parmesan-y, Alfredo sauce, chickeny. Put the cooked pasta into the cooker bowl, the body of it. It's like a ceramic bowl, usually, or whatever it is. And you can just mix them all around right in the cooker and serve it just like that. Yes, I've got a thing called a crock pot. You remove the ceramic bowl. And I just serve it right like that. It is true. I just throw the pasta right in. I mix it all around. I throw a big serving spoon in it. Fabulous. There we go. Yes, very easy to do. Chicken tetrazzini, you could finish it off in the oven, but you'd have to brown the chicken on all sides and make sure that it's done and like that. Right, right. Yay. Yay for slow cookers. So that's, yeah, I don't know if you guys like a slow cooker recipe or not. I'm sure that I'll hear from you, which would be wonderful. Yes. And we are out of time. Yes. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Fabulous. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Our website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. If you want to hear prior shows, they're archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for being here. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.